I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Now from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Pleasant Sunday morning. Tom Ackerman taking the afternoon, the day off, as a matter of fact. A couple days off, I think, for Tom Ackerman. So, Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman today. Happy to be with you. Happy I could do this for Tom. Give him a couple of days. That guy's here all the time, I feel like. So, no reason that he shouldn't get some days off for sure. So we'll have you here for the duration of this program. A little bit shorter today because we do have a Cards game coming up from Toronto, and it's an earlier start time. And so that means an earlier pregame time, which I will also have for you today. So you, if you do not wish to listen to me, well, I'm sorry. I hate to disappoint, but I will be here all the way through here this afternoon, at least until we get you to John Rooney and Rick Horton for the Cardinals and Blue Jays. Cards trying to, well, now at this point, trying to come up with a win in the series after dropping the first two in the series Friday night and then last night, yesterday afternoon, accurately. 7-2 was the final yesterday. The lineup is out. We'll get a chance to talk with the Cards manager, Oliver Marmol, about that. This is a really full show as well. So, really not a lot of time to get in and out of guests because we have so many guests, which is great. We're going to have everything covered for you here today on Sports on a Sunday Morning from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio. We've got the Cardinals manager, Oliver Marmol, coming up at 10:15. We're going to visit with St. Louis University head women's basketball coach, Rebecca Tillett, coming up at 10:30. Also in our first hour, we'll get a chance to visit with Bernie Mikulas. He is normally at the end of the program, but he's been kind enough to move his spot up an hour so that we can get him in here before we get out of here for Cardinals baseball. In the second hour, we'll talk to Lutz Vandensteel. He is the sporting director for St. Louis City SC, and we will get a chance to visit with John Mozeliak, the Cards president of baseball operations. He'll have a shorter spot, obviously, again, because we're going to be running right up against Cardinals baseball here for that one. But all of that is coming up, so we're going to have, as I said, just about anything that you can think we're going to have covered for you here on this Sunday morning, so we're glad you're here. Tough one for the Cards, as I mentioned yesterday. Nice win for the Tigers, for the Mizzou Tigers yesterday afternoon in Columbia. Probably, I don't think probably, definitely their biggest test and maybe a surprising test because I don't know that we thought coming in that Boston College was going to be in the top 25, but they had a couple of good weeks starting with the upset of Florida State, which maybe doesn't look quite as good as it did back in week one when Florida State was top 10. They just hammered Duquesne, Boston College did, before coming to Columbia yesterday, and they got off to a good start yesterday, but the good news for Tigers fans is that the Tigers found a way to come back. Was it pretty? No, not necessarily. But you come back, you end up with a win over a ranked opponent. So you're 3-0, and that's where you want to be at this point. You're going into SEC play next week with Vanderbilt coming up and coming to Faurot Field next week. Looks like that'll be a 3:15 game, by the way. I'd seen 2:30, 3:15. They were still working that out. So it looks like that'll be a 3:15 game against Vanderbilt next week, but you're in the spot that you wanted to be as far as 3-0 going into that first conference game. Fans obviously continue to show up. The Tigers fans continue to fill Faurot Field, and Mizzou, quite frankly, has the longest winning streak in college football now, dating back to last season. They've won 7 consecutive games, so they are on a roll. And again, it doesn't have to necessarily be pretty if you're coming away with a win against a ranked opponent. And that's what they did yesterday afternoon. And we can get into a little Mizzou talk with Bernie coming up at the end of this hour. So we'll chat about that. Also have him kind of talk about perhaps the impact that the $250 million renovation that was announced this week, or confirmed, I guess, because we had heard about it before that, but the Board of Curators confirmed that they approved that spending for Mizzou football to upgrade Faurot Field, and in the department's words, really put them in line, more in line with what fans can expect from an SEC game day and from an SEC facility, and that is on the horizon for Mizzou. So good things coming out of Columbia for sure. We'll step aside here. We'll get ready to visit with the Cards manager, Oliver Marmol, as he gets set for the final game in Toronto. That's coming up on the other side of the break. I'm Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman on this Sunday morning. It's sports on a Sunday morning here on KMOX.
Now, the Manager's Chat, presented by Siteman Cancer Center. Siteman Cancer Center, national leaders in cancer.
Is hit high in the air to left field, and backing up is the left fielder. He looks up, and it's gone! A big fly for Jordan Walker, his third home run of the year. He does indeed get the first hit of the game, and he also scores the first run. Way to go, Jaywalk. 1-0 Cardinals.
That was yesterday afternoon. That was certainly one of the highlights of the last couple of days in Toronto. A nice long home run from Jordan Walker hit yesterday afternoon in that loss to the Toronto Blue Jays. We have tried to connect with Oliver Marmol, who is obviously in Toronto as they get set to finish up their series there with the Blue Jays. Our manager's chat, as always, is brought to you by Siteman Cancer Center, national leaders in cancer. I don't know if we're going to have the opportunity to connect with Ali this morning. We've tried a couple of times again, haven't had a chance to actually get him on the phone. We do have some post-game audio we can get to from yesterday afternoon. And hear from him a little bit on what, certainly what happened yesterday. It was a tough sixth inning yesterday afternoon that really changed the course of that game. And it was not helped by a throwing error, which it was a throwing error charged to Mason Winn. It was a play at the plate, and the ball seemed to be there. It was kind of a short hop to the catcher, Pedro Páez. Either way, they could not connect. It ends up leading to 4 runs in that game yesterday, and the Blue Jays end up winning, going away 7-2. So we'll catch a little bit of Oliver Marmol. This is from postgame yesterday afternoon.
Another tough one, to be honest with you. You look at offensively, we just didn't string anything together all day. Bears did a nice job against us. Jordan with a good swing for the homer there on that slider that stays up. But overall, just couldn't do a whole lot offensively. I thought Gibby gave us a shot. Pitch counts running up that last inning there, but you look at it, doesn't want to give in to Guerrero, tries to get a change up on the lefty. And you look at Clement, this is a guy that doesn't swing and miss a whole lot. He's going to put everything in play. And our best chance to keep him on the ground for a double play would be Gibby there. And he gets the ground ball. Unfortunately, it doesn't go our way with the play at the plate. But I thought he gave us every bit of a shot. And then after that, game got out of hand.
What made Barrios particularly tough?
Gosh, I don't feel like we really impacted the ball a whole lot outside of a couple good swings. There's a lot of weak contact. Sped us up with the fastball sinker mix and then this kind of slurvy slider. But overall, we just didn't do a whole lot against him, man.
You mentioned Gibson's pitch count. Was it one of those things where you feel like he was just sort of, falling behind a little bit more than usual? Because, I mean, sometimes he's, he gets strike one, strike two, and sort of
work. Not necessarily. No, you look at who you want to get beat by, and he didn't give in to Guerrero there, and then the lefty in his best matchup, he tries to get him with some swing overs with the changeup, and then he goes after Clement to see if he can get a ground ball, and he gets it. But I thought he did his job, man. That's not where the game's at all. Yeah.
What was your takeaway, I guess, from that play at the plate there from where you were standing? Seemed like a weird one.
I haven't looked at the replay, but it looked like initially he thought he came up with it and then bounces out. So getting that out matters. Unfortunately, we didn't. Yeah.
That is Oliver Marmol. That's courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest. Appreciate that audio, hearing a little bit from the Cards manager yesterday. Again, we did try to connect with him today, but obviously it's tough with them getting ready to play their game coming up here in just a little bit more than an hour, till we have pregame anyway here on KMOX. And you heard him talking there about that play at the plate. I also thought it looked kind of strange when you saw it, because I didn't think it was a terrible throw, but it was one of those that the way it looked and the camera angle that I've seen most of is from behind Pedro Páez. It looked like maybe it short hopped him, and he just couldn't hold on to it. I didn't think it was a terrible throw. It may have been rushed a little bit from Mason Winn, although I think a lot of the Mason Winn throws seem like they're rushed just because of how hard he throws. So he's always coming up firing. So I didn't feel like it was a terrible throw. The error ultimately did get charged to Mason Wynn because the throw did hit the ground. It was, I guess, a short hop that Pedro Páez just couldn't come up with. And of course, as has kind of been the case this year with the Redbirds, there's no margin of error. The margin of error is so thin, and it feels like when one thing goes wrong, that's enough to sort of undo the game. And it certainly was enough to undo the inning yesterday. It was enough to get Gibson out of the game yesterday. And the Cardinals offense just had no answer yesterday for Jose Berríos. They had three hits in total, including the home run from Jordan Walker, which you heard as we got into this segment. They had nothing else really going. They got the sacrifice fly for the or the ground out rather for the final run, and that came after one of those three hits. Alec Burleson led off that ninth inning with a base hit, and then he ends up scoring on the ground out from Jose Fermin. But at that point, there's two outs, and the Cardinals just didn't have anything else. But they just did not have the offense going, and we've seen that more times than not this year, where the offense has been absolutely baffled by the starting pitcher, by the opposing starting pitcher. And it's not always for reasons that can be defined, whether it's a new face. A lot of times it seems like it's a left-hander, although I don't think the splits have been as bad this year as it feels like, or that people maybe think that they are, the splits against the righties and the lefties for the Redbirds. But they have been baffled, as I said, on a number of occasions by the starting pitcher, the opposite starting pitcher. And we've just seen so many instances where the offense just hasn't been there. And then yesterday was certainly one of those days that they just could not get the bats going. Now, today it's going to be Miles Michaelis. And Miles Michaelis has really struggled over his last couple of starts. He had a terrible start on Sunday in that series finale when the Cards had a chance to win against Seattle. He ends up going two innings, giving up nine hits and seven runs in that ballgame. He gave up five runs, I think, before there was an out in the first inning. And that came on the heels of a bad start against the Yankees, and he ends up now two starts in the month of September, and he's got an ERA of 13.5 in the month of September from those two starts. So he's another guy that really could use to have a decent start, something go well for him, because it hasn't here recently. And as he comes into this afternoon's game, he's got an ERA that is now approaching 6. That start against the Yankees was just 4 innings. Again, the start against Seattle was 2 innings. Before that, he was all right. He had a nice start against San Diego, a decent start, 5 2/3 innings, 6 innings against Milwaukee. So he's had some lengthier starts. He did give up some runs in that San Diego start, but the Milwaukee start was good. 6 scoreless innings from him there. But it's been more down than up, certainly for Miles Michaelis. And again, he's trending right now in a pretty bad way, 13.5 ERA in the month of September. So they're going to need something from Miles Michaelis. The good news is, if they get to that point, some of the big guns in the bullpen are rested. They should be available this afternoon as the Cards try to salvage at least a game from the series. We are able to connect with the Cards manager, Oliver Marmol, so at least a few minutes with Ollie this morning. Ollie, it's Joe Pott. Thanks so much for taking a little time.
No doubt, man. How you doing?
Yeah, no, I'm doing all right. I appreciate it. And I know that you're getting ready for a series finale there in Toronto this afternoon. Just wanted to touch on a couple of things. And I was talking a little bit about the offense. Jose Berríos certainly kept your bats off balance yesterday.
He did, man. And that's a bigger conversation and topic, mm-hmm. because there's certain guys that I feel that are taking, and I'm just going to be honest with you, just got done having a meeting about this, and that's why I was late jumping on with you guys. Certain guys are taking really good at-bats and not getting results. Certain guys aren't taking good at-bats and not getting good results. And certain guys are feeling pretty good about where they're at, and the results are there. But it's a matter of being able to be more consistent with that, and then not just individually, but collectively as a group. When you look at our pen yesterday, like, a lot of the questions revolved around, man, Gibby, that inning kind of got a little big on him, and then Fernandez comes in and gives up a couple runs. Sure, we can talk about that all day long. That's not where the game was lost. We have to take a step back and look at the bigger picture of, like, what have we done well? What allows teams to go on a run? And what's been are a frustrating component to that. And at the end of the day, you don't go on a run because of having a strong bullpen. Like, that's not how this works. It's helpful. But when you have a strong pen, what ends up happening is you just win a lot of close ball games, which we've been able to do. Like, if you look at our style of play, a lot of our games are 3-2, 4-2, 2-0, 3-1. And once in a while, you score a couple runs. But that's been kind of what's kept us where we are in that 500 mark, is our pen has given us a chance in every game. But you go on a run by, man, the starters being nails, and then being able to score runs at a rate that is meaningful game to game. So there has to be more consistency in our day-to-day at-bats, where you can string together some quality at-bats. You can have a crooked number multiple times during a game. You can score 4 to 5, 6, 7 runs, sometimes blow a guy out, give the pen a rest so that you can use your guys differently in the next game that's close. But you look at Kittredge and JoJo and their usage, man, like, you use Kit yesterday. That would have been 3 out of 4 days with all of them being multiple innings. That's a large ask. And part of this is keeping those guys healthy, which we've done all year. So there's some moving parts to this that have definitely been frustrating, but there's my long-winded answer.
No, yeah, and I absolutely appreciate it. And then I think kind of what you talk about, it's reflected, I believe, in your lineup today. When you look at it, it is a large amount of the lineup is a lot of the younger guys that are here and that are taking those at-bats. And as you said, sometimes good at-bats aren't getting results. Talk about what you've got here in this lineup today that's a lot of younger faces.
You have to understand what you're working with. And as frustrating as certain at-bats may be, based on, man, that approach isn't what you want to see with a runner on second right there. Like, you have to be able to pick a pitch in a certain spot that you can do this with it. Those are teaching moments, and that's what we're going to see down the stretch here is, man, it's Baker understanding, hey, man, it's a 1-0 count. Like, you have to get your swing off and not be late on a fastball. If it's Burleson trying to move a runner, and this is, I mean, talk about an open-minded guy that just loves learning the game, loves taking as much information from his success and his failures. Like, I love this dude. He has a runner on second the other day, fastball up and away, fouls it off, fastball up and away, and he taps it over to second. Well, man, in that situation, we want you to get something closer to your body that you can pull, and if it's on the ground and it moves the runner, if it's in the air, there's a chance for a double, and you trade spots with him. But just understanding the mindset of driving the baseball in that opportunity there, while getting the job done. So these young guys are going to play, but there's a lot of teaching moments where you sit down after that bat and definitely after the game, and you go through at bat by at bat, pitch by pitch, and you have them walk you through what they're thinking and what they're trying to do. And then you insert yourself in different parts and say, all right, I understand that, but have you thought about this? Are you thinking about this? What was your thought process and then your ability to execute on this? And they're better for it the next time. And it may not go their way the next time, but you stay on it, man. That's part of development at the highest level, especially when you have guys here that are first or second year guys, which we have a decent amount of.
Cards manager Oliver Marmol with us just a minute or two here. And I know that you take joy in seeing the guys, you know, have those moments and take joy in the game. And Thomas Tsagesi's had quite a week with his first hit, his first RBI, his first home run on Friday. I know that is gratifying, satisfying. That is nice for you to be able to take in and share with him, with the teammate.
You ain't kidding. That's what you do it for. And this is a kid that he's a winning player. There's good players and then there's winning players. When this organization's been really good, it's been filled with winning players. And this is a guy that's come up, and just the way he goes about it, man, how he communicates, like, what comes out of his mouth all leads to how do we win, not how do I get mine. And man, it's good to have that, man. This is a good, gritty player. He grinds out at bats. His at bats are going to be fine. I know he's hit the homer and a couple singles here, but he's going to take really good at-bats for us down the stretch. And he plays really good defense. So he'll play short today. Mason has a day off. He's been battling some soreness, but still posting every day, which I'm proud of him for doing that. He's no different than Nolan, man. They don't want a day off. They want to be able to go every day and play as many games of that 162 season as possible. But Wynn and Goldie have a day off today, and we'll go from there.
And then finally, real quick, obviously key to have a much better start than you've seen the last two times out from Miles Michaelis today.
Sure. No doubt about it, man. This is a guy I think we're very familiar with his style of pitching. He pitches to contact. There's not a ton of swing and miss in there, but he has to stay off the middle of the plate, pitch to the edges and get soft contact. And then when he gets in those pitcher and pitch counts, man, he's got to be able to expand a little bit better and not throw as many strikes in order to get chase. If he does that, he's given himself the best chance possible. If not, there's a louder contact and it leads to some crooked numbers. So our hope is he's able to do that today, man.
Ollie, thanks so much for taking some time. I know that you are preparing for a game. We always appreciate you doing this for us, and best to you for a good one today, and travel safely home.
All right, you got it, brother.
Oliver Marble with us here on this Sunday morning. Appreciate him catching up with us, even though it was a little bit abbreviated. We will keep things rolling. The head women's basketball coach at St. Louis University, Rebecca Tillett, joins us on the other side of the break as we continue on the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning here from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio at Camo X.
Kick out, three attempt, bang, got a nice answer. Kennedy Calhoun.
There you go. How about that? A little women's basketball for you from St. Louis University. That's Kennedy Calhoun, a senior. She played in every single game last season, helping St. Louis University to the WNIT championship. Joe Pott back inside the Stiefel Sports Studio, and we're happy to be joined by the head women's basketball coach at St. Louis University going into year number three, Rebecca Tillett. Thanks for taking some time this morning.
Hello, Joe. So great to hear from you, and thanks for spending some time thinking about our women.
Of course, of course. Building a program, that's obviously where you're at, and that's something that has been highly successful at St. Louis University the last couple of years in that building portion. You win the A-10 championship in 2023, get an NCAA, a taste of the NCAA tournament. Last year, get into the WNIT, make that run all the way to the title. How has the summer been? How has the building been coming off that WNIT title?
Yeah, the summer's been great. You know, this is a really veteran group. That's what I keep reminding them, about. We've got 8 returners, and then we've infused some new young talent as well, 4 freshmen who we're really, really excited about. So you get to see those upperclassmen nurture the new players, and you see the humor and innocence that comes with freshmen and some of the questions they ask, both, strategically around basketball, but also about transitioning to college life.
And coach, with a veteran group, of course, comes expectations, and going into year three, the expectations are a little bit higher. How do you address that? What do you talk to your team about those expectations and not necessarily living up to the outside expectations, but your own expectations?
Yeah, I think we talk about expectations as healthy pressure, right? You earn the opportunity to be in those big games. And we talk throughout the year, even beginning in the summer and now through the fall, that each opportunity that we have to prepare together is preparation for those really big moments. And we don't want to take them for granted. We want to put everything into those moments. I think one of the big lessons of last year, and maybe why it took us a little bit longer to get going than we thought our team would take to take that championship path, is that when you win one championship, sometimes you as a group collectively think you get to start farther ahead on the next journey. And we've been really clear with this team. We're at the bottom of the mountain, starting a new journey with all of the lessons of last year to help guide the way.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting take. It's yes, building on last year, but this is a new mountain, right?
That's right. That's right. And you think about people that do hike, right? Like, you know the path, but then you might know, hey, I need more water on this side of the path, or I need to have a snack at this point. And it's the same thing in terms of how we attack challenges together as a group.
Rebecca Tillett with us here on the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning. Earlier this week, the non-conference schedule announced 13 non-conference games, and you're going to start with a bang. 4 out of 5 on the road. I don't care where you're at, what level, that's a challenge in of itself.
It is a challenge. I do, think it's good that we ended last year, right? 5 of 6
yep.
On the road with the WNIT, and this is such a veteran group that, hopefully they're going to remember some of those lessons. Really excited about, the group of non-conference opponents we have. And, I've talked about this in the past, but how you build that non-conference schedule, there's so many factors that you think about, right? Number of home games, types of opponents? What style of play are we going to see that's going to best prepare us for the A-10 and for an NCAA tournament run? And we feel like we've done that. And, yeah, we'll be tested early, and we think a veteran group is the best type of group to test early.
And there's a couple of MTEs, some tournaments on there. You're going to be out in California right around Thanksgiving, not the worst place to be in November.
Really exciting. And for quite a few of us, myself included, first time in California.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
As many places as basketball has taken me and the women on our team and our staff, quite a few of us haven't been to California. So that'll be exciting. And then to play, you know, against USC and star power and Juju, like, you know, that's just an incredible opportunity for us.
And that has to be part of your consideration as well, right? The experience for your team and for your student athletes, just the experience in general. As you said, for a lot of folks, you're getting to see California for the first time.
Yes, and we've got a couple former teachers on staff too, right? Like, that's never going to leave us,
right,
being educators. And how do we give these young women opportunities both on the court and off the court as we travel?
It's amazing the schedule. The season is fast approaching, but you have a nice event coming up, Billiken basketball event on the 27th. It's going to be all part of the homecoming and family weekend at Chaffetz Arena. What can fans expect coming up here in that weekend, just a couple weeks from now?
Yeah, you know, I think fans can expect a great opportunity to interact with both our women's team and our men's team. High energy. There's a lot of excitement surrounding both programs. We all really enjoy working with Josh. Quite a few of our women have observed practices. I've been in practice meetings with him. He's a real fan of the women's game as well as the men's game. So I think it's going to be a really special night and time for all of us to get together and kick it off.
You mentioned that. You mentioned Coach Schertz, and obviously a lot of hype around the men's program. How much does that benefit the women's program as well? Because it's sort of a, you know, the tide rises all boats, right? And so it I'm sure that it feels like you can feel the buzz within your program as well.
Absolutely. I think it's a mutual respect between both programs. Both, you know, leaders in this program, right? The men and the women on the team are both driving their teams forward towards championship pursuits. And so when you surround yourself, right, with people that are like-minded in that way, certainly men's and women's soccer, baseball and softball, you know, we've got a lot of programs striving for excellence together. And that puts, you know, all of us in a position to be better. And then Coach Schertz, just his positivity, his contagious personality for the love of the game, I think is, you know, permeating the building.
I hear from so many people that get a chance to come out to your games at Chaffetz Arena, and I think this is true of the women's game in general, that just the approachability, how many opportunities they have, whether it's after a game to talk to some of the players, maybe even grab an autograph. That approachability is a big deal to the moms and the dads, parents like myself, to get a chance for their kids to kind of take in the sport, isn't it?
You know, I think it's one of our favorite moments, right, after the game ends, right? Our fans are there for us, especially our young fans, whether it's a successful night or a night where we learned a lot of lessons together, right? It's that great reminder of these young people out in, you know, on Chaffetz Arena court, you know, getting autographs signed or T-shirts signed or looking up to those people who they one day want to become, whatever field or sport they decide to go in. So those are really special moments for us, especially with the addition of the ability for young fans to buy student athletes' jerseys now. We've gotten pictures from young fans wearing Brooklyn Gray's jersey, like going into the supermarket. Like, that's right. So, it's so neat to just see those opportunities, both for our student athletes and then, of course, for the young people that we have a chance to influence and inspire.
Very, very cool. Rebecca Tillett, the Billikens basketball night is September 27th. That is free at Chaffetz Arena. Coming off back-to-back tournament titles, the A-10 a couple of years ago, the WNIT this past year. Wish you all the best in season number 3. Plenty of games are going to be here, by the way, on Camo X, so fans are going to be able to listen to those games as well. Coach Tillett, I appreciate you taking some time this morning.
We appreciate the coverage always, Joe, and thank you for your support of women's sports. And yeah, let's all go get number three together.
Without a doubt. Rebecca Tillett with us here. We appreciate her time. We've got more to do. We've got Bernie Mikulas coming up on the other side of the break. It is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on a Sunday morning. I'm Joe Pott from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio. We're coming back on Camo X. Glad you're along with us. It's sports on a Sunday morning as we continue to roll right along here just ahead of Cardinals baseball, which will come up at 11:40. So this program a little bit shortened today, and we've had to do some adjusting on the fly, which we will continue to do, and that is fine. Hoping to have a chance to visit with Bernie Mikulas here in this segment before we get out of here for the 11 o'clock news. But if we don't, that's all right. We will adjust as we have adjusted. I mentioned this earlier, and I was going to talk to Bernie Mikulas about this, but if you didn't hear, and this is, again, this is something that was announced previously by Mizzou, is that they were looking to get funds. They were looking to expand Faurot Field, Memorial Stadium, and the big project was for the north end zone. Well, on Thursday, the University of Missouri Board of Curators at their regular meeting, this was held at UMKC. They confirmed that they approved the $250 million spending that it's going to take to overhaul, redo that north concourse at Faurot Field. That's the open concourse. That's the Rock M side of Faurot Field. But we're talking about multi-level concourse there. You're talking about new stadium entry, completely new stadium entry right there on the north end. They are not losing the lawn or the Rock M. It looks like all of that from the renderings are going to stay. But they're going to reimagine that north end zone. And of course, a few years back, they did the south end zone with the Tiger Plaza, I think they call it. I'm not sure. Where the guys come out, you've got that tunnel where the players come out onto the field. You've got that open area in the south end zone. So now the north end zone is going to mirror that to a little bit. And the thing that you keep hearing, the thing they keep saying is that they are going to be more on par with the SEC fan experience, with the SEC stadium experience. And that is something that Mizzou said all the way back in, what was it, 2006-07, when they started their move to the SEC, that they were going to continue to spend, that they were going to be able to compete in the SEC. Obviously, now you've got a national competitor on the field, so this is all timing up quite well after the year last year, after the start this year. They're sixth ranked coming into the week, and now they've got this approval of this $250 million renovation there. And that's a big deal. That is a huge deal. And I'm happy to say that Bernie Mikulas has joined us here. And first of all, Bernie, it's been a while for you and I.
Joe, way too long. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. And I appreciate getting the opportunity to chat with you.
You got it, man. I look forward to doing all my CamWex hits. And then when Tom Ackerman told me that I'd be working with you Sunday, I said, yeah, old friend, long time. Good to be back with you.
Without a doubt. I was just kind of talking about and touting the $250 million renovation plan that they've approved now for Mizzou and for Faurot Field. And they told us all the way back when the move was made to the SEC, they were going to spend the money, they were going to compete. And they have done that. They have delivered on that. The south end zone has happened. Now the north end zone's going to happen. And obviously you've got a nationally competitive team on the field to go with that.
Yeah, and Mizzou was lagging there for a while, but I give them credit, you know, step by step by step. You know, they've gotten things up to the, you know, a good quality SEC level in terms of infrastructure, stadium quality. The NIL program has been very, very good at Mizzou. They got an early jump on most SEC teams. I know that Coach Eli Drinkwitz has done a wonderful job of just sort of rallying everybody, including donors, including the administration, including legislators in Jefferson City. So it's all kind of converged in a very nice way at a very good time, because Mizzou, for them to be sitting ranked sixth in the nation, and yet there's all these other good things to come and all these other good things they can count on. It really does bode well for the future of Mizzou football, and that's exciting.
Yeah, I think it's great. I've been to a couple of games the last couple of years when I really had not been in a long time, and it was a good experience. It's going to be a better experience. Let's chat a little Cardinals before we get out of here for the 11 o'clock hour, but here we are on September 15th, and while I I guess this team is better than last year. You're still in a position where this is a team that's not going to be a playoff team in 2024.
I do appreciate the improvement. I also, you know, appreciate, I'm going to go with a nerd stat. I also appreciate that based on their run differential, they should have a much worse record.
Right.
You can make the case if you wanted to that they've actually overachieved, but it's still not good enough. And we've seen this offense drag for 2 years in a row, and it was worse this, you know, in many ways worse this year than last year.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And, you know, the starting pitching is still on, oh, clearly better than last year. But last year was literally the worst starting pitching ERA they had in a full season in franchise history. So they could only go one way, which was up. And I'm not trying to be smart out. I mean, it's just, so yeah, it's better, but it's still not good enough. And what's a shame about it is this is, you know, Bill DeWitt bought the team in 1996, so it's been 29 seasons. This bullpen, and I can back it up with 20,000 facts. This is one of the best bullpens the Cardinals have had over the DeWitt 29 seasons, and it's kind of like a shame that they didn't put a better offense around it and a better starting rotation around it, because the team could be headed to the playoffs if those two other areas had just been successful. And so they haven't put a full team, a quality full team together, I guess is the best way to put it. And they're going to have to start to do that. And it's no good to have a strong bullpen if the other two areas are below average.
When you've got a lineup like you have today, and it is largely the younger guys, when you've got Sajacy in there, Siani in there, Baker in there, Burleson in there, you do not have Goldschmidt. Arenado is in there, but do the last 2 weeks, do these last 14 days of this kind of lineup and the use of these guys, does that help moving forward? Does that help moving into 25?
Well, I think so, because you're going to learn a little more, and it's not many games left, but you're still going to learn something about each one of these guys. But I hearken back to last season. Mason Wynn came up. They did the smart thing in a lost cause season. They got him some games at the major league level. His stats were nothing, but you also saw him adjust. He drew more walks, struck out a lot less his second month in the big league compared to the first. And obviously, this experience, this exposure to major league pitching for the first time, there's no question about it, helped Mason Wynn for this season. And Mason Wynn's out of gas a little bit here at the end, but Mason Wynn, we all would agree, has had an excellent season, and he's one of the real exciting players you can look at and I believe safely count on for the future. So yeah, I think anytime you give young players that you think are going to be or have a good chance to be part of your team going forward, I think it's only a positive, and it doesn't matter how well they do or poorly they do. It's just accumulating that experience can really help them.
Bernie, I got to cut it short because we're up against the 11
it's
o'clock
right.
news, but I appreciate taking the time. It was great to catch up, and I know we have plenty more chances to do this again down the line.
Joe, have a great rest of the weekend. Take care, and thanks to Cam Wax.
Yeah, always appreciate it. That's Bernie Mikulas with us here. We are up against time. We are coming up on the 11 o'clock news. We have plenty more to do in the 11 o'clock hour with what time we've got. We'll visit with Lutz Fahnensteel. We'll visit with John Mozeliak. And, of course, Cardinal Baseball comes up for you at the end of the 11 o'clock hour today as they finish off that series with the Toronto Blue Jays. But it was great to catch up with Bernie. It was great to hear from Rebecca Tillett, the women's basketball coach at St. Louis University, and of course to hear from the Cards manager Oliver Marmol. Hour number two is coming up. It'll be at Lutz Fahnensteel coming up at 11:15. I'm Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman. It's sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX.
Smith swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Now from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman on this Sunday morning as we get into hour number two of the Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning program. Had a good first hour with Oliver Marmol, Rebecca Tillett from St. Louis University, and Bernie Mikulas chatting for a little bit. We are abbreviated here in this 11 o'clock hour because of the earlier start time for the Redbirds. So we'll have pregame coming up at 11:40. So we're in with you here till about 11:35, and then we'll break for Cardinals coverage. We do, in this second hour, though, we're planning to be joined by Lutz Fahnensteel, who is the sporting director for St. Louis City SC. They dropped a tough one last night, losing 3-1 at home to Minnesota. Minnesota started the night in the last playoff spot in the Western Conference, of course, where City is sort of aspiring to get to, whether or not they do or not, certainly took a hit last night. We'll also have a chance, at least for a short time, to visit with Cards President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak. Cardinals down to their final 2 weeks of the regular season here, and a mammoth mountain to climb if they have any outside hopes of getting into the postseason. So we can chat with him about that. Last night, as I mentioned, City dropping that 3-1 game to Minnesota. They got on the board quick. Within 5 minutes, they were up on Minnesota. Cedric Teuscher scoring the goal in the fourth minute. They gave up a goal towards the, well, midway through the first half to tie it. It was level at halftime, and then two goals in the second half. One was an own goal. One was on a PK, and that's how Minnesota comes back to win that game last night. So City is in a precarious position. The Cardinals are in a precarious position. It's been a tough summer of sports in that regard, in two teams that I think expectations obviously were much higher. Certainly for City, although maybe we saw a little bit of it down the stretch where they kind of fizzled out a little bit. They had such a good start, such a good run to start the year last year from City, which ended up catapulting them into the Western Conference regular season title, and of course into the playoffs where they lost to Sporting KC. But then you look at the Cardinals, who had a dismal year last year, and as when we were talking to Bernie Mikulas, he mentioned there was literally nowhere else to go but up. There was literally nothing. I mean, I don't know what this team would have done to not improve on last year, and they have, and they've greatly improved in several areas, but as Bernie put it, not enough, right? You have a bullpen that is outstanding. You have starting pitching that is much better than it was last year, and that's where the focus was, obviously, in the offseason with Gibson and with Lynn and, of course, with Sonny Gray. But you have an offense that just has been, for the most part, just lost a lot of times. They just have not performed on a regular basis. That consistency from the offense is what has what will ultimately cost this team another playoff spot in 2024, and that's what is disappointing. And I wasn't even thinking in terms until Bernie brought it up. You're not thinking in terms that this is literally one of the best bullpens that we've seen here in the last 25 years, and it's basically going to be wasted. You have a closer in Ryan Helsley that has been lights out, and they literally made an effort. They said this at the beginning of the year. We're going to change the way we deploy Ryan Helsley because we feel like it will increase his chances of success. And it's been like a different pitcher at the back end of the bullpen. For the most part, he does not appear in non-save situations. He mostly does not appear outside of one-inning situations. And that has allowed him then to appear more in back-to-back situations because he can be more effective in back-to-back situations. But again, it's going to go for naught, ultimately, because you're going to end up missing the playoffs again. The other point we talked about, and I had mentioned it a little bit with Oliver Marmol, but Bernie talked about, look at Mason Wynn. Mason Wynn is a good maybe foreshadowing of what can happen with some of these other younger players. Specifically, like you look at the lineup today, Jordan Walker, Thomas Sejesi, Lucan Baker, perhaps, who is getting an extended look here at the big league level. Over the next 2 weeks, 14 games, if you can see the things from them, or even if you can just keep getting them the at-bats, and as Ollie Marmol put it, have those teaching moments and use those teaching moments, now think about what you could have with your lineup going into 2025. If those guys can benefit the way Mason Wynn benefited from his time in 2023 and look where it's propelled him to 2024, then you feel like it can do the same for a great deal of what's in this lineup today, which is without Goldschmidt. It does include Arenado, but it has Baker and Sejesi and Walker and Ciani and Nootbaar and Burleson and Donovan, who is still relatively young. If you keep these players regular at bats over the next 14 days, and as it's been over the last couple of weeks, perhaps that leads you into more success in 2025. So we'll talk to John Mozeliak about that. That comes up later on in the hour. On the other side of the break, it's time to talk to Lutz Fan and Steele about last night's St. Louis City game and what they've got to look forward to and what they've got to do over the next month and a half of the regular season. That's next. Jill Pott in for Tom Ackerman in the Stifel Financial Sports Studio. It is the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning here on Camo X.
Played by Nerwinski, long Betcher on a bus just outside the box. Just breathe through. Now it's 2-2. And Toy Shirt flushes it home. 4 minutes in at City Park.
Well, that was the call last night from Joey Zanaboni on our sister station, Y98, as the City did get on the board quite early in last night's match, but ultimately come up short against Minnesota United last night. We're happy to have the sporting director of St. Louis City SC, Lutz Fan and Steele, with us here. Let's just start with last night. John Hackworth said after the game, obviously, he was disappointed. The room was disappointed. That was a game that coming in, they felt like they had the opportunity to win, and they come up short. Lutz, your thoughts on last night?
Yeah, I was disappointed as well. Very simple as that. You know, in my opinion, not good enough. Started well against a team which was beatable, against a team we had to beat. And, you know, for me, it was one of the worst games we played all season. And I think the moment we picked for a performance like that, when you know you go out there and you play for everything, would have been a golden opportunity to close down the gap to the playoff spots. Would have been 5 points away from Minnesota. And, coming out, you look strong. You look sharp in the first few moments. And you have one bad mistake in the middle of the first season. And then somehow everything breaks slowly into pieces. And, you know, I could come up again now with 55 different excuses from not given penalties to given penalties or whatever. In the end of the day, it all doesn't matter because we did not perform up to the standards that we want to see us and we want to be. And that's the truth about this game yesterday. So we need to, want to finish strong. We have 5 more games, and that's very important to look out for 2025 already. So, we need to focus on that last 5 games to finish the season definitely on a high and not come up again short like yesterday.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate your sentiment when you're talking about, you know, whatever the case is officiating wise, right? That there could have been a penalty called one way for City. There was a penalty awarded for Minnesota in the 62nd minute, but as you said, it's not necessarily those calls. It's how you react, how you respond to those things, correct?
Yeah, 100%. You know, and there is always that room for things happening, things you cannot control. I think you can control your own performance and your own mentality and the way you go out there. that you want to be on that field to the last moment and fight and try your best. Referee decisions, that's something you can't control. And, you know, there is no point for us to whine around about that. We whine a long season now that this didn't go out well. And we had lots of injuries now. We have another two injuries coming up yesterday with Durkin and Kessler coming up at halftime, two of our most defensive structure players. And then, yeah, we need to replace them. And shortly after halftime, we concede a goal. But then again, it doesn't matter. You know, that's also happening with other teams. They also have injuries. They also have red cards. There's also referees sometimes making a decision which is unfortunate. We just have to deal with that and get better and learn of performances like yesterday, that is not what we want to show to our fans when they're coming to the stadium. This is not the way we prepare ourselves during training, where we work hard and then we don't really bring it onto the field on a Saturday. It's just the things we need to face this week and have a good talk and regroup and see that, the playoff spots, mathematically, we are still in there. But, you know, we also need to be a little bit realistic here and be aware that it's mission impossible. Till it's not over, it's not over. But we need to start winning games. Simple as that. We haven't won on the road for a long, long time, and that's another one which we need to, one of these curses we need to break. Hopefully next week, and then really going with a positive mind going to 2025.
Lutz Vandensteel with us here, the sporting director at St. Louis City SC. Since you mentioned them both, Henry Kessler with the knock to the head went into concussion protocol. Chris Durkin had a little issue with the knee. Do you have any updates on those two today?
Yeah, that's all. You know, they're all going into some tests and seeing the doctor today. So we will figure that out probably by tomorrow. If there's a longer break or if they will be available next week. I think Henry looked pretty good after the game. We'll had blur vision at halftime, so that's always important to follow these protocols. You know, that's the health of a player is more important than the result in the end of the day. And let's hope that Chris, which played a great first half, by the way, I know that the knee's okay. I think this is really important in moving forward. But it sums it up a bit, to be honest, the amount of injuries we had this season, and then yesterday at halftime, we are forced to take two players off. It's never easy, but as I said, you know, that's something you can't control. You need to deal with it.
You obviously made a coaching change mid-season this year. John Hackworth playing a little bit of a different system with regards to possession. I was listening to the game last night on Y98. They talked a lot about it, but by the end of the night, 58% possession time. Again, a little different than the way the team operated under Bradley Carnell. Is that something that is a focus of John Hackworth's? And are you seeing some of what you wanted to see with John Hackworth in charge of this team?
Yeah, our philosophy, our style of play haven't changed. You know, we still want to be a high-pressing team. We still want to be a team which gets into the counter-pressing moments, high intensity. What we do, so our numbers when it comes to physical numbers, pressing moments, sprinting, high-intensity runs, that all stay pretty much the same. But yeah, we also signed six new players, you know, that right. Transfer window. So I do expect from players which we bring in from Germany that there is a bit more possession there and there is a bit more creativity with the ball which we showed in recent weeks. So, you know, I don't want to sound like a sour grape here, because we also had some good games in recent weeks. We had some good victories. We had played some nice attacking football. So it's not all bad. It's just that the game yesterday, which obviously sits still in my stomach, as you can hear. So we do have more possession. I think we create also a good number of chances again. But I believe that John is doing a good job. John has a very, very good relationship with the players. The players enjoy playing for John Hackworth, and that's where we stand right now.
As you move into the last few games, as you mentioned, road wins have been hard to come by. You'll play against the San Jose Earthquakes in San Jose next week. It's another game that I have to imagine that, looking at it going into that game, this feels like, looks like a game that, frankly, you should come away with points.
Yeah, you know, yesterday we made it very clear that it's a must-win game. It's a six-pointer against Minnesota, and it's not different going to San Jose. I mean, San Jose haven't won many games. We've beaten them at home. Yes, we're going there definitely to win the game. There is no other way of explaining. We can't travel to the team which is at the moment last in the standing and would be happy with a point. We had plenty of opportunities in recent weeks to get that so much wanted away win. You know, being up in Portland 2-0, 3-1, 4-2, and conceding in the 99th minute to be a 4-4. Also being up for a long time in New England and have opportunity to actually win this game last week. We somehow always managed to be very close to get an away win, but and we got lots of draws. But I think we have enough draws this season. I think for us now, it's you know, we want to win this game. That's an opportunity to break that bad series of not having won for nearly a year on the road, which is a crazy number. So that's something we need to focus on this week, and we definitely want to come away from San Jose with 3 points in the pocket.
Lutz Van Steele, I appreciate you taking the time as always, and I really appreciate you being candid, offering us a candid opinion. And I know that, as you said, that loss isn't sitting well, and I don't think anybody here wants that loss to be sitting well. That's the way we expect that to be. We expect that level from you, so I appreciate you coming on and talking about it with us this morning.
Thank you so much.
Lutz Van Steele, the sporting director for St. Louis City SC. They dropped the game last night, 3-1 to Minnesota. They head to San Jose for a matchup with the Earthquakes. That is next week, coming up on Saturday night. We've got just a little bit of time left. We'll visit shortly with the Cardinals president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, as we come back here on the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman, coming back on KMOX. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman this Sunday morning, back in on the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning. A very quick chat coming up here with the Cards president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, and then it's off to Cardinal baseball. John, first, thanks for some time this morning. I was talking to Oliver Marmol a little bit earlier. We had Bernie Miklas on, too. The kind of overarching theme was, as you look at a lineup like today and you look at the young faces in there, you do kind of get a feeling for maybe what the future looks like in terms of the real core of this Cardinals lineup, don't you?
Yeah, good morning, Joe. And, yeah, I think that's right. I mean, obviously, when you look at where we are in the season and when you start to put a little focus on the future and what that might look like, I mean, obviously, you're trying to give some guys some opportunities, a little runway to see what we have, and just have a better understanding. You know, you clearly don't want to make massive decisions over what you see in the month of September, but it is a glimpse of the future, and I think we should take advantage of that.
Certainly, and I do think, and obviously, as you said, you maybe aren't taking everything, but you have 14 games left. You have 2 weeks left. You owe it to yourselves and to the organization, right, to understand where you are going into next year.
Well, I think, you know, obviously you're starting to think about how you want to plan for next year, what that's going to look like. And you know, you'd certainly want to take advantage of that time. But, you know, I think the big thing for us right now is we want to finish strong. We want to feel good about ultimately how the month of September went. And I think that'd be a good building block for the future.
With just about a minute left, I want to get your thoughts on the week that Thomas Ajayi has had and what that's like for you, watching him with his first big league hit, RBI, and ultimately home run.
Yeah, I think all of that was really cool, but I think the one thing that stood out was just his defense.
Yeah, it's played well.
Obviously, to go in and you know, make your debut at the major league level, there's probably a lot of nerves and some uncertainty and all of that, but the way he played was really impressive. And so, you know, I think it's great to see. And clearly when you think back to last summer when we did make some of those trades to offload some talent, but hopefully to get some talent for the future, you know, he's certainly one of the guys that we were very excited about to get in that deal.
Well, John, as I said, it's going to be a short assignment for you. We're up against it because we've got Cardinals baseball coming up, but I always appreciate you taking some time on Sundays.
Thank you, Joe. Catch up in the future.
Absolutely. We'll do it. That's the Cards President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak. We appreciate him taking time. Lutz Pfannensteel, Bernie Mikolas, Rebecca Tillett from St. Louis University, and, of course, Oliver Marmol. Cardinals baseball coming up on the other side of the break. Joe Pott in for Tom Ackerman. I'll be back for the pregame coming up after this.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.